Let America be America again.
Let it be the dream it used to be.
Let it be the pioneer on the plain, seeking a home where he himself is free.
America never was America to me.
Let America be the dream the dreamers dreamed.
Let it be that great strong land of love.
Where never kings connive, nor tyrants scheme.
That any man be crushed by one above.
It never was America to me.
Oh, let my land be a land where liberty is crowned with no false patriotic wreath.
But opportunity is real, and life is free.
Equality is in the air we breathe.
There's never been equality for me, nor freedom in this homeland of the free.
Say, who are you that mumbles in the dark?
And who are you that draws your veil across the stars?
I am the poor white, fooled and pushed apart.
I am the Negro bearing slavery's scars.
I am the red man driven from the land.
I am the immigrant, clutching the hope I seek.
And finding only the same old stupid plan of dog eat dog, of mighty crush the weak.
I am the young man, full of strength and hope.
Tangled in that ancient endless chain of profit, power, gain, and grab the land.
Of grab the gold.
Of grab the ways of satisfying need.
Of work the men.
Of take the pay.
Of owning everything for one's own greed.
I am the farmer, bondsman to the soil.
I am the worker, sold to the machine.
I am the Negro, servant to you all.
I am the people, humble, hungry, mean.
Hungry yet today, despite the dream.
Beaten yet today, oh pioneers.
I am the man who never got ahead, the poorest worker bartered through the years.
Yet I'm the one who dreamt our basic dream.
In the old world while still a serf of kings.
Who dreamt a dream so strong, so brave, so true, that even yet its mighty daring sings.
In every brick and stone, in every furrowed turn that's made America the land it has become.
Oh, I'm the man who sailed those early seas in search of what I meant to be my home.
For I'm the one who left dark Ireland's shore and Poland's plain and England's grassy lay and torn from black Africa's strand.
I came to build a homeland of the free. The free?
Who said the free? Not me.
Surely not me.
The millions on relief today.
The millions shot down when we strike.
The millions who have nothing for our pay.
For all the dreams we've dreamed and all the songs we've sung.
And all the hopes we've held. And all the flags we've hung.
The millions who have nothing for our pay.
Except the dream that's almost dead today.
Oh, let America be America again.
The land that never has been yet.
And yet must be.
The land where every man is free.
The land that's mine. The poor men's, Indians, Negroes, me. Who made America? Whose sweat and blood?
Whose faith and pain? Whose hand at the foundry? Whose plow in the rain?
Must bring back our mighty dream again.
Sure. Call me any ugly name you choose.
The steel of freedom does not stain.
From those who live like leeches on the people's lives, we must take back our land again, America.
Oh, yes. I say it plain. America never was America to me. And yet I swear this oath, America will be.
Out of the rack and ruin of our gangster death.
The rape and rot of graft.
And stealth and lies.
We, the people, must redeem the land.
The mines, the plants, the rivers.
The mountains and the endless plain.
All the stretch of these great green states, and make America again.
And welcome to Here We Stand. I'm your host, Kevin Ann of Eagle Strong Voice, the dream, brothers and sisters. Not just for America, but for the whole world. We must make the world again. It reminds me of the quote from Thomas Paine, who the inspirer of folks who were struggling to break away from the biggest empire on the planet in 1776, he wrote, "We have it in our power to begin the world again." And that's the challenge we're faced with every moment now. Make ourselves again in order to remake the world. And you know, it's kind of like digging in a garden. The job of digging up the old soil, tearing up the old roots to allow the soil to be planted again, they're two different jobs. Digging up the soil, wrecking the old, to restore and bring about the new, planting seeds. We all have our own different jobs to do, friends, but we're doing it together. Later in the show, at the end, there's another really great song from the 60s, actually, Carry It On. And one of the lyrics in there is, if you can't carry on any longer, you take your hand of your sister and brother. There's a word that needs a saying, carry it on, carry it on. So that's our message today, as always. We are carrying it on today. I'm very honored and pleased to have back with me Brenda Everall, a sister in the struggle. She's calling in from Ontario, Canada, in the incipient Republic of Canada. She's been a leader in the campaign to expose child trafficking within the so-called Children's Aid Society, the CAS in Ontario. She's going to be talking about her experiences, how she's being still targeted, and the ties between church and state in this endless corruption that's carrying on. Now, before that, I wanted to share a couple of really important news items. You remember last week, I believe, we talked about this incredible order in Rockland County, New York. One guy, Ed Day, he's the chief executive officer of the county of Rockland, New York, and he brought in a Emergency Power Act, which gave him the right to say, if your child is not vaccinated, not only can they not appear on the street, but you'll go to jail for 6 months if you allow them on the street in a non-vaccinated condition. They weren't allowed to go to school. They were living really in this self-imposed state of emergency. Now, just this last week, that order has been overturned. There was a news item sent to me. I'll just read it to you briefly. Rockland County, New York, Parents of unvaccinated children sue Rockland County. Judge rules in their favor and ends the ban. Earlier today, that's last Friday, April 5th, State Supreme Court Judge Rolf Thorson sided with the parents of Rockland County and issued a temporary injunction against County Supervisor Ed Day's emergency power order, effectively ending the ban. It basically said that the 166 cases of measles that occurred did not constitute an epidemic or a disaster. Therefore, Ed Day had no basis to declare the emergency order. Now, it's just a temporary injunction, but it's at least stopped that. And it shows you the power of the law. And it was interesting that a local judge did that. The power in America of the different levels of court, there's a constitutional right Americans have to a common law jury trial, and that tradition continues. So we want to, again, remind people that common law has power. You just have to act on it. That was a really encouraging thing. Also, if you remember that really kind of stunning interview we did last week with the insider of the Mormon Church describing the murder of children in the Mormon temple in Salt Lake City. Just this last weekend, as we speak, the Mormons are having a big conference in that very temple. We have people on the inside who will be reporting some of these things to us again next week. We're going to have Deborah, that eyewitness insider, back on the show with us next Sunday, so please tune in for that as well. And before I bring Brenda on, I want to just mention as well, next week, it's actually a really important anniversary, April 14th, 2008, a whole bunch of us walked into Holy Rosary Cathedral, occupied the Catholic Church during a Mass, forced, 2 weeks later, the Canadian government announced the formation of the so-called investigation into missing Aboriginal children directly as a result of those occupations. And it shows you the power of our numbers. So we're commemorating that next week and in the week following with really a movement that's sprung up now in 8 countries. There are going to be direct action occupations of Catholic churches and Anglican and United churches in Canada and around the world. There's going to be direct lobbying of politicians to cancel the tax-exempt status of these churches. And there's even politicians in Europe and North America who have begun to show an interest in this. The tide's beginning to turn. Also, there's a revival of this movement among Catholic priests called Not in Our Name, where there's actually going to be a class-action suit brought by Catholic priests against their bosses, saying they do not have the right to compel us, under Vatican policy, so-called canon law, to stay silent about child rape in the church. So all of these new fronts opening up, and if you want to get involved in these actions, if you're in Canada, America, Ireland, England, France, the Netherlands, Italy, or Australia. There will be public actions happening through our ITCCS networks in those countries. In Canada, there will be actions in Vancouver, Winnipeg, Saskatoon, Thunder Bay, London, Toronto, and Ottawa. So if you're in any of those cities or countries, please contact us, thecommonland@gmail.com. We'll send you out flyers, posters, stickers, anything you need, and the name of local contacts. So, without further ado, hello, Brenda.
Hey, Kev.
How you doing, sister?
I'm all right, thank you. And yourself?
Well, like I say, you know, life carries on. We carry it on. It's been a while since you've been on, and you've got a lot on your plate, like, you know, the struggle is ongoing for you like any frontline fighter. And so I wondered if you could just share with us a little bit about who you are and what brought you into this whole battle.
In a nutshell, I lost my own children in 2000 at the CAS, so I became an advocate when I realized what was actually going on in the system and how they were literally preying on children. So in time, in and around 2005, a young lady disclosed that she had been raped in a local foster care home. So I started advocating that issue, and it led to me being kicked out of a local church, even though I had been deeply rooted there. My whole life, I was baptized there, and my children were, and I was married there. And I was employed there and held a lot of trusted positions, you know, on the board and taught Sunday school. But the moment we received a new minister, her name's Lynn Donovan, her and I eventually started colliding, so to speak, with the issues. And at the time that I was trying to expose these problems with CAS, she was partnering with CAS to launch a program called Reaching for Rainbows, which is a program for disadvantaged girls. And from my perspective, it also has a Masonic undertone to it, or overtone. It's pretty strongly associated. So from there, tensions just grew. Parts of my family who were also involved with working for CIS, it just got really hard. This small town got too small for all of us. And I became severely oppressed along with my children. And like you, for some reason, the church really wanted me and my husband separated. So that eventually occurred. And it was just me and my kids holed up. And then the police were really aggressive with me for a number of years. And in and around 2011, the foster parents around here actually started getting charged for the sexual assaults and other debaucheries. But so now we're at the point a couple years, well, they were all, I guess the charges, you could say, all started tapering off around 2015. And then, it was all silent, even though a lot of people couldn't understand why the CAS just got away with it. Uh-huh. So after some investigation in the community, the executive director, who was also the local director, he's been charged with several counts of charges related to enabling the abuse to happen to the children and subsequently covering it up. So
would you say just to clarify something, what church are we talking about when you say the church?
St. Andrew's Presbyterian.
Right. Now, of course, Presbyterian, they were one of the founders of the United Church back in 1925. There's been a long connection there.
Yes, the Presbyterian Church apologized for their role in residential schools in the 80s, I believe.
And of course, we know what an apology is. Under the law, an apology is an indemnification of yourself, so you don't have to be held responsible.
Well, that's the interesting part about this new minister. Her father as you know, actually was a residential school minister.
Tell us about that.
I believe he ran one in Saskatchewan and one in Manitoba. So now, you know, his daughter, this Reverend Lynn Donovan, she's doing a lot of work on reconciliation.
The R
word. But when the TRC report first emerged, she wrote an article, or had one submitted anyways in the Picton paper, that suggested that we respond to the TRC report with silence.
That's a great quote.
And that we contemplate it by walking around the labyrinth that she was having installed on the church grounds. So since then, recently she's had an artist, I believe his name is Jason Rolu. He painted, with permission of Christy Belcourt, her piece titled Christy Belcourt is an award-winning Métis artist, and I guess she gave permission for her piece, Wisdom of the Universe, to be painted at the back of the church.
Well, that's a
so that was
trend.
A big to-do.
Right.
And
now, do you mind saying what community we're talking about, Brenda, if that's all right?
Picton, Prince Edward County.
So that's
a lot of people that know this area.
Yep.
Well, it's a hot spot for tourism, but if you've ever lived here, you, like, know in your bones that there's fundamental corruption. And just circles of friends that, if you're not in the circle, your life can be very difficult here. So,
well, you mentioned in previous interview that Prince Edward County is actually the where John A. Macdonald, the first prime minister, came from. And it's an old Masonic, it's center of a lot of that old Masonic kind of Anglo-Canadian establishment right in that community, right?
Oh, yeah. There was a thesis that was published by, I believe his name was James Kalman Taylor, and it's available online. It's called The Ties That Bind, and it's a study of the effect of secret societies or Masonic order and whatnot in this area, the effect of fraternal orders in rural living. So this place has actually been, from my perspective, an experiment and a study for quite some time.
Right. Kind of social engineering. We see the same patterns in certain select areas seem to embody that. And you get all these things. What's amazing, and I just wanted to get a bit more into this collusion going on between CAS and the church. We found, you know, in similar places, like a little community like Nelson, British Columbia, the equivalent is called the Ministry of Children and Families in British Columbia, but they are literally across the street from the United Church. And the janitor who worked there went to one of our people and said, you know, there's a tunnel that goes between the United Church and that MCF office. The head of the Ministry of Children and Families was a convicted child rapist, a guy called Ed John. He was an Aboriginal chief and up north, and he's been named a lot in the child trafficking on the Northern Reserves. It's that blatant. I mean, they're across the street from each other. Do you find the same kind of blatancy going on where you are?
Yeah. Like, if you don't know, you don't know. You know, but someone like me who's curious about what's going on,
mm-hmm.
you see that you get shut out pretty quick, you know? Like,
right.
They don't want you in certain places or certain clubs or associating with certain people, and if that, you know, you start forming relationships with people that are a little naive that are in those circles, well, you're quickly discredited, you know, a smear campaign arises and nobody wants anything to do with you anymore.
Yeah, the usual treatment.
You know.
Now, tell us a little bit about CAS for people who don't know. I understand it's really a private company. It's not a government agency at all. Is that accurate?
Well, this is where we start getting very, very mucky, because when I started advocating the issues, we were on fire with making CAS accountable, because it's funded by the ministry, but it's privately operated. Like, it's all part of an association of Ontario Children's Aid Societies, but it received, I believe it received some funding municipally, but mainly it's through donations and ministry funding that they operate. But they, when I first started advocating the issues, the ministry believed that the coroner was actually good oversight. And so we started as advocates trying to get ombudsman oversight and trying to make the Ontario Ontario College of Social Workers and Social Services Workers, we tried to make them make social workers through CAS accountable. And then we started hitting brick walls. So,
like what? What would a brick wall be? Give an example.
The Liberals, every time we brought a bill forward to have ombudsman oversight, it was shot down completely every single time in the first or second stage of reading. So no matter how much support we had, you know, we started getting petitions, and then advocates started going and filling the chambers, and it didn't matter. So eventually a film was released. I believe it was through Ryerson University. Mm-hmm. Called Powerful as God, and it started exposing, like, how serious these issues really were, and that gave a lot of us validation to, you know, keep pushing. So we found out that there was actually, you know, the UN Convention on the Rights of the Child and the Canadian Constitution actually has the mandate to protect children, but they gave that away. I can actually get into that in a moment.
Well, let's do that, because there's big loopholes in the Canadian Constitution, too. We can talk about that.
Right.
Go ahead. Yep.
So we found that no rights were actually being protected, no matter how many they said we had or how much we tried to enforce them.
Right.
It was just a big brick wall. So then the question of welfare versus protection emerged. And this is where I started kind of finding you, because I learned that Indian issues and child protection issues and whatnot were under similar, they were similar issues in jurisdiction of the federal government, mm-hmm. under Section 91 of the Constitution. So I would just like to, this is a piece by Jane Scarf, paralegal in Ottawa. Her and I did a lot of work on the Constitution back in the day. And she says here in her article that it's not a legal opinion, it's just an opinion based on observation of procedure, that the right to be presumed innocent under or until proven guilty under CAS litigation, the onus is not on CAS to prove a case against you. You must present more evidence than the CAS that you are innocent. And then,
so in other words, they're outside due process of the law.
Oh, for sure. And then the right to refuse to give evidence against yourself is lost in the CAS investigation and litigation process. And the right to not be arbitrarily accused. CAS can apprehend your children without a warrant, and unlike criminal process, they can get a warrant without swearing out the evidence to a JB. And then there's no right to counsel when your child is apprehended. And apprehended by force, and with no warrant. And you don't have the right to a jury in child protection cases.
No. It's and the right to speak,
the very right to speak about your case in public and in press under Section 2 of the Charter is not permitted in the CAS investigation because of Section 45 of the former Child and Family Services Act, which makes it punishable up to 3 years in jail to identify a parent or child involved with the CAS.
You know, Brenda, if I could just jump in for a minute. It's what you're saying is almost word for word what people in Ireland were saying on the show a couple of months ago when they're describing this agency, TUSLA, which is the equivalent of CAS in Ireland.
Right.
You can't even mention it. If you try to mention it in a newspaper article or in a court or anything, you're thrown in jail. It's the same process at work both sides of the water.
It's insane. Most people just think there's the odd problem, but when you get into the fundamental problems with the CAS, it is a nightmare. And finally, the right to be treated equally under the Charter is clearly violated. Removing children at birth who have never heard removing children at birth who have never been hurt or neglected. You know, it's...
You mean the child doesn't even have to be neglected or hurt and they can still seize the child?
Yeah.
There's no probable cause? Do they have to provide cause?
Oh, no. And Jane says here, because they are teens, and especially if they were ever in the CAS themselves, if they have depression or they're poor, etc. This is the CAS risk assessment process, which gives demerit points towards apprehension for every association one has with a disadvantaged group. This is the opposite of what the charter demands under Section 15.
Now, they've even extended it up to 18 now, right? It's not up to 16, but they can grab kids up to 18 now, correct?
Well, if the kids want help, they can access it until they're 18 now. And we know that, you know, there are a lot of kids that get groomed into wanting CAS services. So,
Now, this seems like designed to create an agency that can traffic and exploit children totally outside the law. In other words, they're a criminal organization.
Yeah. I didn't start off believing that, but I've had to learn the hard way and through deep research. And, I mean, I challenge people at this point to prove us otherwise, you know, because it is trafficking children and it's harming them and it's covering it up and we're paying for it through taxes. It's insane.
How much are they paid for children that they seize? How much do they get from the government, do you know?
I've been so out of the loop directly with it all because I just don't believe in changing the laws. I believe in just finding a better way. So I haven't been involved directly with child protection news and updates for quite a while in those arenas, but it's a good price. And when they go into foster care, the foster parent, it's tax-free. So the foster parents can, say, be on ODSP, or they can be rich as hell, but the foster money they get is tax-free. It's all extra.
I know in British Columbia you get twice the amount if you're a foster parent than you do if you're a mom on welfare.
Oh, and on top of that, you get all these breaks, you know, because it's so stressful. You get to go away and all that's paid for in the child care and all the extras, like, you know, meals.
Yeah.
Special meals while they're out and all this.
Now, there have been groups around Ontario that have been trying to, you know, expose this stuff. But from what I've seen of them, they're not going beyond simply documentation and court challenges. And I know that somebody has a constitutional challenge in the works. Do you want to talk briefly about her? Or I know we want to have her on in the future.
Yeah, hopefully she can make it on soon because she's in a pressing situation. She's up pretty much in a similar situation to what I've been going through. The CAS actually has her children right now, so it's a little more pressing than mine ever was because I was able to hold on to my kids through most of it. So I would like to bring some attention to Ashley Smith and the troubles she's going through.
Okay, go for it.
She tried to bring a constitutional challenge forward, but I spoke to her the other day through chat, and she said that the government stomped it, and they're closing her file, and it's a really, I mean, it's all points of law and whatnot, and we're to the point that we know there's too many problems. You know, it's not a point of law anymore. Did we do the challenge right, or this or that? It's the nature of the challenge that the courts have to recognize at this point, and they're refusing to. So that's the problem we're all facing. But, you know, we know that we're right with the Constitution because OSPCA, the Animal Protection Group, they just, I think it was in around January, well, this article is January 3rd from a guy named Sean Fine. And he said in his article, the Ontario Superior Court, Justice Timothy Minima, agreed that the powers granted to the OSPCA violate the Canadian Charter of Rights. He called the group opaque, insular, unaccountable, and potentially subject to external influence through fundraising. As such, Ontarians cannot be confident that the laws it enforces will be fairly and impartially administered, he wrote in a 24-page ruling.
Well, it's safe to talk about animals.
Exactly. So under the Charter Section 7, which protects life, liberty, and personal security, Justice Miniman said it is unconstitutional for the OSPCA investigators to have police powers, yet be shielded from public view, not subject to oversight and accountability under the province's Police Services Act or to Freedom of Information Law or complaints to the provincial ombudsman.
Well, even Brenda, let me just ask you something. Has there been any similar statement, analogous statement made by a judge anywhere in Ontario about the CAS?
Not to my knowledge. But he does say, this particular judge goes on to say, but the ruling's importance goes well beyond animal welfare. The principle here is that you cannot delegate police-type powers, investigative powers, without also legislating accountability and transparency, Curtis Andrews, a lawyer for Mr. Bogart, said in an interview.
So why is it that...
Oh, so that wasn't the judge that said that. It was a lawyer. But, okay. You know, it's the same. It goes beyond... Yeah. We've transferred police powers to the provinces, and that's unconstitutional.
Well, it's a private agency that has the power to be outside the law and do whatever they want to grab children and traffic them. So why is it... I think the answer is pretty obvious, but tell me why you think no legal case is being brought against CAS by anybody.
Well, several people have tried. I mean, the constitutional popes, everybody... There's been several attempts made at attempting to poke the giant, but... It's always shot down, you know, and there's no way of knowing exactly how many people have tried, but I know it's numerous people.
When you say it's shot down, and say in the case of Ashley Smith, how exactly did the government block the constitutional challenge? Do you know the details?
I don't know the details. It was just a quick little chat to try and get an update, but...
Well, we're going to have her on the 21st in 2 weeks.
But, I mean, she said you pretty much know why. She said, because there is no justice. It's all a farce. But we got to keep doing whatever we can to get these kids home.
Well, it's also because it's a big industry. Child trafficking is like Big Pharma. You know how Big Pharma cooperates with governments to create fear campaigns to push vaccines, right?
Mm-hmm.
Saying there's an epidemic when there isn't. Well, it's exactly the same thing here. It's business, right? And you can't get in the way of megabucks. So... This is what I want to talk about with you for the next 20 minutes or so, about alternatives now, what we can do. When you said before you don't have confidence anymore in changing the law, what do you want to see happen?
Well, after all of the crap I went through, I then, as much as I knew the tribunals and whatnot were corrupt, I wanted to follow everything through to get accountability, or attempt to. To, you know, prove to myself that all these systems are, in fact, broken.
Mm-hmm.
So I've taken almost every matter that I have, and I've put it before its respective tribunal. And I can tell you there is no justice in Canada. There just isn't. So I want to finish up with all of that now and compile it into a report. And I want to actually send it to the Republic of Canada.
Mm-hmm.
And say that I need some kind of asylum, you know, out of this Canadian system. And beyond that, I want to encourage people to get out of the rabbit hole, because I was in there for quite a while. But I recognize now that there's nothing we can do about it until we stop what's enabling everything that's being hidden from us. So... if we could actually stop the enemy, which is, I've learned, and I think I'm pretty confident in saying it's the Vatican and the UN that has to be stopped at this point. Everything else, you know, pretty much takes care of itself.
Right, and of course, sorry, go ahead.
And because the Vatican has this horrible agenda that it's supporting with, I mean, it's the United Nations agenda for sustainable development.
2030.
And the Pope and most of the world religions have professed that they are happy to work on religion solutions to enter into this agreement. And this agreement calls for one religion. You know, it's the 17 Sustainable Development Goals are quite upsetting when you understand them at the root.
Yep.
And we have 11 years to thwart it. So it's really important now that we come together to expose the top, you know, the Vatican and the UN, because that's where it's all coming from. So we got to get out of the rabbit hole and expose these top people instead of just all these minor issues that we can, and they're not minor, I know that. But
no, but, you know, in terms of the Vatican, too, of course, the British Crown is a subsidiary, we know that, or partner. You see, with our work on the genocide in Canada, we've exposed all of this, the twin pillars of Crown and Vatican that are responsible here. And as long as you try to operate in the Crown system of law, you're screwed. It's like Native people, they got a pat on the head, a bit of blood money, and they got a gag order. That's it. That's justice, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what we need to talk about, you said you want to apply to the Republic. What the Republic of Canada is a parallel jurisdiction. It was set up in January 2015. It's a system of common law jurisdiction. And this 12 people can get together, sign a common law charter. They are a legislative body. We've got these operating in a number of different places, mostly off the radar because of the persecution people get. But those bodies can then elect common law sheriffs, common law courts. They can make citizen arrests. You got to do this. Like in any revolution, you create a parallel system of power, and you start operating through it. And you say, if you want justice, come into our common law courts. You know, that's interesting because my ancestors in Ireland, that's what they did when they fought the British. They set, right in the middle of the Civil War, they didn't wait till after, they set up what were called Brehon Law. Those were traditional Gaelic laws, not the crown system, Roman system of law, but indigenous law in Ireland. They had Brehon courts where the Irish people began to take their case into the courts, not the crown courts, but these new ones. And that's what we need to do in Canada. We just need to get more people on board with the vision and then start putting it into practice.
And that's the thing. Even though these groups are operating off the radar right now, they're getting stronger and they're ready to pop up when all hell breaks loose, you know, when the system
exactly
finally
does
come back. So, you know, it's not as obscure anymore or taboo to even talk about these issues. It's not conspiracy theory anymore. It's something in motion that's happening, and it's inevitable. So, you know, just become interested in it a little more and just a little more perceptive to the actions of the people and the will of the people. And, I mean, it's all in our bones. And nobody's actually really bad. I mean, there's a few of them out there, but most people are either misinformed or misled or indoctrinated or...
Well, it's interesting you say that because we found that I mentioned in the intro, 11 years ago today, we occupied this Catholic church in Vancouver. And it's really what was the, you know, fly that broke the back of the system, because right after that, they announced the thing that led to the TRC and the whole cover-up, official cover-up. But it's because the churches were worried that we're occupying them on a Sunday morning and telling people not to give money in the collection plate like we're still doing, right? But the cops showed up that day, and I remember I went over to the police sergeant, and I said, I give him a copy of the Vatican policy, Crimen Solicitanus, where everyone is obligated to cover up child abuse and not tell police. And I said, are you aware that the Catholic Church is engaged in a criminal conspiracy, and they're not telling you guys when children are raped in there? And he looked at it dumbstruck, and he didn't know what to do. He went away and asked, he got on his radio and asked for instructions. Then he pulls everybody out. The cops stand back. It's like they knew we were right, and when the church saw that the cops weren't backing them, bang, they collapsed. 2 weeks later, the government announces they're going to start an inquiry into, quote, missing children, which never happened, of course, but we tipped that, Goliath, right there. We did, like, counted coup on the system right there. Imagine if 100 other people are doing the same thing. This would really topple a lot of this shit, you know?
Yep. And I know a lot of people that have been broken by the system. They were broken for a long time, but then, you know, we emerge as different people. And
That's
an army of warriors comes out. And I don't mean warriors as tough guys. And there's warriors of all different levels, you know, internet geniuses, researchers, frontline workers. We're all building, and we're building steam, and it's inevitable. So, you know, it's just time that in our communities we push unrepentant as much as we can. I have a copy of that out, circulating. I currently have two copies of Murdered by Decree. One is in the hands of a native, another one in the hands of a county professional. So little by little, you know, people, and it's being more received. And we have to start working on our own direct action unit. And perhaps even work on that investigative team that we've all bounced around before.
Yeah.
But,
well, you know,
yeah,
one thing, too, you mentioned in some of the books, the common law training manual is a really important thing for people to read because it gives you instructions how you can set up this in your own community, a common law court. I was just talking to somebody in the States, and actually in California, and they are setting up, she's been formed this common law assembly like we did in Dublin, and they've appointed her as the common law sheriff. So first thing she's doing is she's going to go talk to the regular sheriffs, get them to take an oath of allegiance to the local common law assembly, and help them arrest known child-raping priests. Like, this is exactly the kind of direct action we need to do, because, you know, what is amazing, Brenda, what I find over the years is, like the little man behind the mask, the system is this little shithead hiding behind all of its supposed power. When you press that, the balloon punctures, and they run for cover, because they don't have the power we think they do at all. It's mostly imaginary.
It is, and when you, you know, stand head-to-head with them, you find that out. They buckle, and they're not as big as we thought they were.
Tell us in your community what's something you imagine going on, like under the jurisdiction of the Republic, not the Crown. What would kind of a community project be that you have close to your heart or the kind of thing you would like to see happen?
Well, first I would take down the recently erected statue of Sir John A. Macdonald.
Right.
we're a proud loyalist heritage here. So then I would there's not much I would have to do, you know. Like, once we become responsible for ourselves and our families and our communities, all the issues take care of themselves. People start homeschooling again, or building schools that actually work for the children, and then we start co-op, you know, and bartering and working together.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, this monetary system, that's, like, just a nightmare. If we can get ourselves out of that, just by working together, it's going to change the world in itself. And just getting back to the earth, you know, back to our roots. I just think once we arrest all the corruption and we build a strong community in all of our respective areas again, just the problems take care of themselves, because people want to be happy and healthy, and they'll work together to make sure that happens. And, you know, there's some people that have governance in their bones, and we'll have a responsible system run by the people. And it's really not that far away, and it's not that hard to do once you understand the issues and work away at them.
You said the two key words there, responsibility and governance. Like, we have to take those steps ourselves. And we've got to teach the people first. One of the things that we need to set up, first of all, is some kind of, not just a public meeting to explain this to the people in your community, but an actual training workshop. And that's what we do a lot. We go around and organize these workshops, letting people know the power they have under common law and what they can do. Pick an issue locally and start working. And, you know, when people take that next step, that's when it's kind of like we all carry these wounds in ourselves, right, having to live in this messed-up culture. And we've all learned to be so individualistic and suspicious, especially these days. And we don't trust each other. We don't even trust ourselves, right? And so you get, we just tried this. I was talking to three people around Montreal, and they wanted to do this. The second time we talked, one of them had already split away saying, oh, I don't trust that person. She sounds suspicious to me. And she split. She just left. It's like people are not allowing themselves to work together. Like, why do you experience that, and what do you think is a way around that?
Well, I do experience it. I see a lot of paranoia, but also from my own perspective, I've engaged in it to some degree because I don't want to be discredited. My mission's too important, you know, so when I find myself getting in a drama pool, I just pull away. Uh-huh. And I don't trust maybe as much as I should, or I'm not as direct as I should be to face the problems. But whatever the issue, we do have to start working together. And a lot of that comes from working on our own egos. A lot of us are hurt. We hold a lot of anger. I've had to process through incredible anger. And, you know, I've been rejected by so many people in this community.
Yep.
And told that I'm a drug addict and a whore. And, yeah, just it's so sick now to just, if that's what they want to throw at me, I know who I am. I know what I've come through. And I'm letting go of all that anger. I'm still a little upset that all of this is breaking open in this area with the Children's Aid Society finally being exposed. And, you know, none of these advocates want to work with me. I've been here front and center, screaming it out since 2000. And the support that I'm not getting in this area perturbs me just a little bit. But nevertheless, I'm going to keep swinging. And I know that there are good hearts doing their own thing in their own areas, and we're all finding each other.
Well, you know, the old saying, if the apples in the barrel are all rotten, you go back to the tree. And, you know, that there's so many, especially the young people out there, I don't want to sound like an old fart, but you don't want to say young people. It could be anyone under 40 now for me, but or 50 for that matter. Jeez. But I mean, you know, the point is there's so much goodwill out there, and so many people, to hell with the so-called professional activists and that. They'll be the first to say you can't do something. We got to go back to the people all the time, find roads back to people. And we've planted enough seeds. One day a spark hits, and I've seen it happen. Boom, the flame spread, because there's so much discontent out there. We just have to tap into it.
Exactly, and, you know, it all comes, again, from the ego. People want control. They want revenge. They want fame. They want notoriety. They want justice. We all want justice, you know. But we're not going to get it with infighting. And, you know, even all this hating on races and religions and all of that stuff is going to take care of itself when the corruption's revealed. There's going to be so much information that makes us understand humanity that hate won't even be there.
Oh. Well, here's the thing, too. We do more than just document the problem. We're giving people alternatives and things they can join up to create a new world. And in the future, I want you back on. We're going to talk about specific province projects that are going to be happening all over the province, especially Ontario. It's kind of interesting because, you know, the biggest support for the Republic, 80% of the support is coming from small towns. Now, you'd rarely see people in cities responding, but it's people in the local communities who are doing this, in the small villages and the towns all over Kanata. You see it. And
I've noticed that it's harder to see the corruption circles in cities. Like, when you see it operating on a smaller level, it's very easy to see, but most people just think they have shit luck or, you know, that they don't see that there's a corruption problem in the cities. And some people do. But you can see it really clearly in a small town.
Well, and also people feel, okay, I can go to the town hall meeting. Like, there's so much intimidation, and just at the level of personal energy, I mean, you're bombarded with all of this garbage in a city. You're not close to the earth. The human things are lost so easily. And, you know, we are
never
often
branded.
Yeah.
You know, you're always walking on concrete there. The food. A lot of people are subject to just fast food and stress and smog, and they don't have, they're just detached.
We need to work from the outside in on this. It's kind of like the vision is we create areas outside the cities that are liberated. People are back on the land. We're forming new relationships, and then we work in from the outside.
And that's demonstrated here, you know, because it's such a high tourist rate. People come here out of the cities, and once they're here, they experience such a relief and such a relationship with nature again that a lot of people instantly will say that they're selling their house and moving to the county.
Right.
So once you experience that reconnection, it's really strong.
This is what I mean, Brenda, when we say it's a spiritual movement, and I don't mean religious, I don't mean denominational, you know, your interpretation of Christ over mine or whatever. It's about the natural law, the common law, is the thing that binds all of us. It's unspoken, it's not a creed, it's life, right? The natural law.
It is.
Nobody's over you. You don't have the right to more than anybody else, and we're to live in harmony. Those three basic laws, right?
And harmony is just doing no harm.
Right.
You know?
You got it, sister. We got about 5 minutes left. I wanted to give you a chance again to say the things that are important to you right now, maybe some sites or people looking ahead for future interviews. What do you want to mention?
I do have a website, Holisticus, Holisticus, international.webs.com. It's a project I've just been working on over the last couple of years, trying to get it actually off the ground. But I would like to see people who can, who have the time and the support, if you can start perhaps an emergency apprehension shelter, because children are apprehended and brought to a place of safety. If they're already at a place of safety, the apprehension is thwarted. So I would like to see it work with people to build that kind of thing in their own communities so we can stop the rate of apprehension. And Holisticus also endeavors to find supports for holistic health and to circumvent the system, to find lawyers that understand what's happening and that will actually fight the system, to find doctors that will actually help, that kind of stuff, and to build those co-ops and whatnot that I mentioned, to form direct action units. I'd just like to see communities coming together, and I'd like to try and model that on my website. But I think it starts with if a group could actually have Unrepentant played in their local theaters, if we could have workshops.
Well, we'll start with that. It's a great intro.
Just even conversations, you know. It doesn't have to go anywhere, these workshops right now. Just get together and talk. Show Unrepentant at the workshop, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And, I don't know, just try to loosen up on our egos and...
Mm-hmm.
And other than that, I don't have many other resources because so many things are so grassroots.
Yep.
But I do want to say that if people are struggling with mental health issues, I'd like to direct them towards David and Colette Steffen. They've been under terrible fire by the government. They've lost their own children after a very tragic death of a child. Their children were apprehended and they were smeared. And it turns out that it's because David's company, True Hope, I believe, Pharmaceuticals, is a Whole Foods-based therapy to mental health. So if people are struggling with mental health, please check out David and Colette Steffen.
Okay, now listen, I want to get back on a week after Ashley's with us. So come back on the 28th in 3 weeks. We're going to talk about all that more. We're just running out of time here, unfortunately, Brenda. Thank you, sister, for being on. We'll talk to you real soon this week and plan to have you back on the 28th where we can talk more about these projects.
Awesome.
Thank you. Thanks, Brenda.
Okay, thanks. Thank you.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye for now. Brenda Everill from Picton, Ontario. If you want to get a hold of her, you got her website. Also write to us, thecommonland@gmail.com. Final message, the song we're going to hear, Carry It On. And to remind you folks, this week and the following weeks, International Time of Action Against Criminal Churches. And write to us, thecommonland@gmail.com, for more information. Also see murderbydecree.com, our main website. You can see the ITCCS news sites there now. The ITCCS.org site was destroyed, but it's being restructured, and a lot of its content, including the updates, are now on murderbydecree.com, where you can also see all of our books, including a book I just published. I'll talk about that next week. It's called The Border, a Post-Canadian Anthology by yours truly. A lot of my writings and speeches over the number of years. You can get that on Amazon.com. It's both in Kindle book form and a paperback. The Border. Just look it up, Amazon. And also thankful for all of your messages of support coming in and financial support. We need to raise about $2,000 every year to make this show operate, so please donate through PayPal. .com. You go to pickwick88@yahoo.com. That's the email to connect with if you want to donate that way. Also on GoFundMe, look up Truth Teller Shield, and that's a way you can fund us. So let's feel inspired to carry this on. Wherever you are, start some action where you are and contact us within Canada under the jurisdiction of the Republic of Canada and its common law jurisdiction. And until next week, brothers and sisters, stay strong, stay clear, take it to heart, take action. I thank you.
There's a man by my side walking. There's a voice within me talking. There's a word.